Welcome and thank you for joining us for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. This week, NAHU's lobbyists John Green and Chris Hartman join us as we prepare for the annual August congressional recess. The House and Senate will take a break from legislating until after the Labor Day holiday to give time to meet with constituents ahead of what is expected to be a busy September. We'll review the key points that NAHU members should make to their members of Congress and how you can uniquely help frame these issues from your personal perspectives to help bolster our arguments here in Washington. Before we begin, please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Spotify, and to rate us. The podcast is posted every Friday on these platforms ahead of being distributed through NAHU's member-exclusive health policy newsletter, The Washington Update, giving you a head start on your weekly healthcare happy hour. The big whoop this week is the congressional recess, with the House set to head back to their districts starting today and the Senate joining them next week. Both chambers will be out until after Labor Day to hear directly from constituents and will return with action expected on several of NAHU's legislative priorities. Can you tell us why the recess is such a critical time for NAHU members to get involved this year in particular?
I can tell you why this period is so important, particularly for my time working for a couple of different members of Congress. And that time in August is one of the few times where it is the longest period of time without any congressional activity. Members of Congress have time back in their district office to go to community events, outings, and meet with constituents. And often this time back in their district or in their state is more solid blocks of time than they have here in Washington, D.C. Their lives often in Washington, D.C. are done in 15-minute increments in very tight blocks where they don't really have time to really discuss and dive into anything. The great thing about meeting your member of Congress during August is they actually have time to truly talk to you, learn about an issue, ask questions, learn about what you do for a living, why it's such an important piece of the overall healthcare structure. So I really think it's very different than any other time of year. If you come to Washington in February as part of our Capitol Conference, which I love people doing, that member of Congress is often going to be distracted by a vote on the House floor, a hearing in a committee, a speech they need to be giving or preparing for, and there's just less time for that personal interaction. So there is no amount of time that is as usable as the August recess to really get a meet with your member of Congress and help them understand the health insurance market.
And I think that given the issues that we're talking about in Congress, really important for us as in a trade association, look what's up on the agenda. Cadillac tax. We had a 419-6 vote. Surprise billing, very hot. Prescription drugs, a markup on Thursday in the Finance Committee. A very heavy healthcare agenda.
If someone has never met with their member of Congress before, what should they do to get started?
So if you're an NAHU member listening to this podcast, we encourage you to talk to your local chapter. Make sure you are talking to the ledge chair. We want to make sure that there's not multiple requests from different NAHU members going into that member of Congress asking for a meeting. We'd love to see it really organized so that there's a few of you coming in from the local chapter to meet with your member of Congress. So please work with the chapter, ledge chair, your chapter president. And then after that meeting set up, NAHU can help provide you talking points for that meeting. We can help provide talking points on topics we feel are very hot right now, like the issue of surprise billing, like the issue of Cadillac tax. Or if you have specific issues that you would like to talk about, maybe they're based on your expertise, we can also help you with those talking points on how to translate that information to that particular member of Congress in the most effective and efficient method necessary.
But how you can really help Chris and I on a local level is to talk about how these issues impact your community, your clients, where you live.
I think that's true, John, because I think the real difference between what you and I do when we go up and lobby members of Congress versus you talking to your members of Congress is you actually are involved in healthcare for a living. What John and I do is we take talking points and information, stats, and other things about what we think is happening out there in the world. But often members of Congress want to hear from people who are actually living and working in the real world and understand how their decisions are affecting people on the ground, in their communities, in their hospitals, with their employers, with their doctors. and really understand how it will affect that local community. What John and I often provide is information about what it looks like on average nationally, lots of statistics, math, finance information, long-term trends, and those things are very positive and helpful, but nothing quite has the effect of having a constituent say, this is what's happening in our community.
One of the most pressing issues that NAHU is closely following is that of surprise billing. Both chambers agreed to wait on any final action on this legislation until after the August recess, meaning that both sides, those like NAHU who are in favor of benchmarking, as well as those who support arbitration, will have weeks to directly appeal to lawmakers. What are some key points NAHU members should raise with their representatives and senators on surprise billing?
Well, I've said this before on the podcast, but I think it's worth driving home again, and that is, any solution has to protect the consumer, not just from the postman, but be a real solution in terms of protecting them from higher copays, coinsurance, premiums, etc. It is not enough to say, well, we didn't send the bill to the consumer, but someone's going to have to pay if it's arbitration. And that does not bend the cost curve.
I really think what people need to be able to do with their members of Congress on talking about surprise billing is talk to them about how they are concerned for their clients. And really, when we say clients, yes, it might be the employer you're working for, but also what this is going to mean for their employees and the people who are really on the ground. And I think right now there's a consensus that we don't want to see anyone hit with a surprise bill. I think all the proposals out there stop an individual from being hit with a surprise bill. Our concern with arbitration is I don't want employees to also get hit with higher insurance rates or higher deductibles because of the way arbitration would go, favoring hospitals and Wall Street over what employees and employers would be paying. And so our concern there is that if the solution we come to on surprise billing includes arbitration, is everybody just going to have to pay more? Are we essentially taking those costs that come out in surprise billing and just spreading it across all the employees as opposed to just that one employee? And that's where I really think we're headed towards on surprise billing with arbitration. And so I really think it's important for you to talk to your members of Congress about that negative impact it's going to have on deductibles and on insurance rates, and we don't want to see that as the effect of this.
This is, again, a local issue. I was involved in a meeting at Ways and Means with committee staff, and we had a constituent, and their company received a bill for an MRI, which is, $500 to $1,000 typically, posted a $60,000 bill and expected them to pay it. And then they had fancy attorneys from New York send threatening letters to pay it. That's what we're worried about. That's the local story that I know you can tell, that you have lots of them because you've sent them to me. That's the story you need to tell. We're being outgunned by the physician groups, probably 20 to 1. Every body part has a lobbyist, and they're all going to Congress and asking for arbitration. And every district has a hospital. So again, we're outgunned. But you need to tell the employer perspective. Maybe bring your client who's had a surprise bill and kind of what was the process, what was the outcome of it, how long did it take to adjudicate if it was adjudicated. That's the story that Congress, members of Congress have to hear, because that's then what they will remember when it's time to vote on the bill.
The Cadillac tax repeal will next be considered by the Senate after the House overwhelmingly voted 419-6 to pass their full repeal last week. What are some of the key points NHU members should be making on this issue?
A couple of points that I would make is that we don't want it watered down through another delay because we have to take care of a premium tax and the device tax. These three have traditionally ridden together and received the same treatment. And while I'm sympathetic, obviously, on premium tax, and I think that the device tax is personally wrong, their lobby group has to fight for their issue. We have fought very, very hard and long to get this far, and we think that this is an opportunity to repeal an entire provision of the ACA relative to this tax and the impact that it will have. Giving us a 2-year delay will do nothing, since the planning horizon is such that it won't impact the negative trend with regard to deductibles and other copays. So we've given this to them on a silver platter. We had a little luck in that the Problem Solvers Caucus gave us that new rule that allowed it to put it on the consensus calendar when you had 290 co-sponsors. But we actually had to do the work, and as you did too, and Operation Shouts and so forth, to get to that 419 mark. So to squander this opportunity by allowing it to be watered down would be wrong. The other issue we're concerned about is that someone will try to load it up because it's such an attractive bill, given the anticipation that it would pass. And the last thing I should mention is that we really need 60 in the Senate. I think to give Leader McConnell the confidence to take it to the floor, he's got to have 60. And, you know, this is a high watermark for us, but our job is not finished yet, is it, Chris?
No, there's quite a lot of work to be done in the Senate, trying to build that co-sponsor list up. Not quite as many co-sponsors in the Senate yet as there has been in the House bill, so there's a lot of work to be done. One of the concerns we've been hearing from people is regarding, if we repeal this tax, where is all that money going to come from? Are we going to try to offset that? Or are we just going to increase the deficits in this country? And I guess how I would respond to that when it comes to the Cadillac tax is, we've had the Cadillac tax supposed to be coming into place in 2018, delayed it to 2022. So the Cadillac tax itself really hasn't come into place for that tax revenue to come into place. And to be honest, right now we seem to be in a pattern of kicking the can down the road. So we're being disingenuous that money is ever going to come in. Second of all, even if the tax comes into place, the way they talk about the Cadillac tax, they know that businesses aren't going to pay the Cadillac tax. CBO, who's sort of the scorekeeper on this, says that we understand that 40% is too high for a business to pay, so we don't think most businesses will actually pay the Cadillac tax. What they say is will happen is instead businesses will cut health insurance back, which is what's happening already through the form of higher deductibles. And so what CBO says is the U.S. government's not going to make money from the Cadillac tax by bringing in revenue. It's when we keep cutting everybody's health insurance, businesses are going to give everybody a raise dollar for dollar for all your health insurance that's been cut. And with that, we're all going to pay more in income taxes. Now, I kind of think that's kind of crazy. I've talked to big businesses, small businesses, labor unions, municipalities, and colleges. No one there says if I cut my employees' health insurance, they're going to get a raise. Those decisions on health insurance and raises are made very, very separately. And so the idea that somehow there's going to be this windfall of income tax coming into the general revenue, I think is crazy on the Cadillac tax. So anytime people talk about, well, how are we going to make up that money in the Cadillac tax? I think it's really important to talk about what that money is. And so that's what I would encourage you as you're talking to the senators, and if any of them do have fears about that revenue side of things, it is not paying for the tax credits. It's not going into any programs. It goes to the general revenue fund. And then I'm just not convinced there's any real money heading that direction, because we're not all going to get rich when our health insurance gets cut.
The issue of single-payer and Medicare for All continues to be a hot topic among Democratic lawmakers, with the presidential debates underway and many candidates favoring a dramatic national health care program. How can NAHU members, even those who don't live in the early caucus and primary states of Iowa and New Hampshire, help us shape this conversation for members of Congress while all the attention remains focused on the presidential candidates?
So I think it's important to, again, meet with your member of Congress to discuss these issues, particularly when it comes to issues of public option, Medicare buy-in, Medicaid buy-in, Medicare X, all these sorts of issues of how that really will eventually lead to single-payer Medicare for All. Public option on the surface sounds great because it sounds like you're providing another option out there. But a public option that will be paying the same rates as Medicare is going to be considerably cheaper because, like Medicare, it's paying the doctors and hospitals considerably less. And at that particular point, other plans can't compete against a public option in that sort of way and will therefore leave the market altogether. And then you'll only be really left with a public option, and that's no option at all. And so I think it's really important to explain to your member of a Congress of while a public option sounds like we're just giving more choice out there, it will quickly lead to no choice at all. And so therefore, it's just a backdoor into single payer.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And let's just be clear, there aren't any bills right now out there. There are a few, but I mean, in terms of really being fleshed out, it's a bunch of ideas, there's a lot of political rhetoric, but we're engaging on it now because if if we don't, when it does ripen, or if it does ripen, we don't want to have been late to the party in posing it, which we do.
With the attention on Medicare for All, this is also a great opportunity for NAHU members, especially those who work with Medicare clients, to promote the importance of preserving traditional Medicare and how best to improve what is already working in that program. What are some talking points on this issue with the ongoing legislative efforts NAHU is leading?
So relative to how Medicare is today, it is vastly improved from what it was in 1965. In fact, the rate of change and improvements in terms of benefits, options, choices has never been greater and is growing. The administration has offered regulations that will expand benefits, allow beneficiaries to get a ride, to go buy groceries and get their medications and, you know, just do things that we never imagined, get more services even at home, short of custodial care. So now is not the time to be talking about a Medicare for All solution, because it's really Medicare for None, and it's not Medicare. It's single payer.
Yeah, I think, John, you make a good point about Medicare for All is not really Medicare. The reason proponents of single payer have used the term Medicare for All is because Medicare is popular. Medicare works well for many of our seniors out there. But it's disingenuous to really call it single payer Medicare for All. Medicare, as we know it, does not cover everything the way the Bernie Sanders plan claims it will cover everything. Medicare has copay and deductibles. Medicare for All single payer does not have any of those. Medicare for All really is single payer that the U.S. government will be providing you everything at no cost, except for that cost that's going to come in from higher taxes that we're all going to be paying out there. And so the reason that Medicare for All is termed that way is simply because Medicare is so popular. And so I think what Medicare is popular, but that's why our members like working in it, like Medicare Advantage. Keep in mind that if Medicare for All comes into place, there will be no Medicare for Advantage. Medicare Advantage is outlawed under Medicare for All. So
our medical supplement.
Yeah, so I think that's really important that there will be no choice the way there is in there. So you outlaw private plans. And so just because Medicare for All sounds good, there will not going to be under any of the Medicare for All plans out there any private coverage available. And so I think when we're talking about Medicare and how we want to improve it, I would talk about things like making sure that people won't get penalized on Medicare if they were using COBRA as their coverage before going to Medicare, or how we'd like to see people who are over age 65 be able to pay into an HSA and use that HSA funds for their Medicare expenses. And so those are the sorts of things that NAHU has been working on to try to improve the lives of seniors, and how different that really is from Medicare for All / single payer.
Before NAHU members head off for their recess meetings, what are some of the resources that are available for members to take advantage of to bring to these meetings to make the strongest arguments to lawmakers?
When meeting with your members of Congress, please contact the NAHU staff. We have some great talking points that are available out there on how to convey our concerns on surprise billing or on the Cadillac tax really quickly. We've got some great infographics, which are these great, very visual explanations for policy areas. We can customize the talking points based on your member of Congress. We want to make sure that the meeting with your member of Congress is going to be productive. Often we try to have you talk to them about areas that A, we know we'll be in agreement on, or B, areas that they don't really have an opinion on or are still trying to research on. We're not trying to set you up in any confrontational situation with a member of Congress. So we're always trying to look on creating a combination of areas where we know we're in agreement, or we know they don't have a strong opinion on one way or the other, and we're going to help educate them. So this is why we customize the talking points in those directions, because there's no point in having just a confrontational meeting. And so really look forward to being able to work with you on anything that we think will help build that stronger personal relationship with that member of Congress.
And remember, if you keep it all local and focused on what your expertise is, then I think you'll be fine.
It's now time for the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour's Toast of the Week. What are we toasting to this week?
This week, we're toasting to all those NAHU members who are setting up meetings with their members of the House and the Senate, and looking forward to good discussions this August.
Cheers!
Thank you for joining us for this week's installment of the NAHU Healthcare Happy Hour, the official podcast of the National Association of Health Underwriters. For more information on NAHU's government affairs efforts, or to join as a member of NAHU, visit nahu.org.